This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Tuesday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Going to get to your viewer mail later on in this program. We're going to have Greg Peterson, after he's done with his run, or maybe before he begins his run, give us his best baseball plays of the day. And Cole Thompson's going to join the program here, Jensen, to break down the SEC. But we got a lot to talk about, certainly in the world of baseball. And I guess, Jensen, one team just doesn't want to stop winning anytime soon.
No, and that's the operative word. I would love to be on the win streak the Red Sox are right now. This has been probably the worst couple of weeks of baseball betting that I've had all year. Process has been good. Results have not been there. And just a reminder to people, like these are weeks that are going to happen. It comes with the territory. It is the marathon of the baseball season. Unlucky in some respects. Heck, I mean, the St. Louis Cardinals do me dirty. I don't know what I did to them. Historic loss on Sunday. Another one last night back-to-back. So hopefully we've gotten the bad beats out of the way. We start anew today and we get a little win streak going of our own.
Trust the process. Process is good. Those results will be following, that is for sure. Let's get to it here in beginning today's show with those Red Sox in our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
We're having a fun group text last night with me, you, and Will Hill, looking at the night's events in Major League Baseball. And Jensen, you're the first guy. Red Sox, they do it again. 6-5, dramatic fashion late. You get a homer in the eighth. You hold them off in the ninth, a couple guys on, and they just refuse to lose. So 14 games in a row, Jensen. Again, what's the longest streak that you were a part of, and what does that feel like? Because I feel like they feel like they just can't lose right now.
Yeah, playing days, it was 10 is the longest, on the broadcast side, I was there for the historic American League setting Cleveland Indians, who won 22 games in a row. And there were nights like these ones, just nip and tuck. You were behind late. You needed some theatrics. And Chad Durbin, come on down. Your table is ready. Just an incredible job. The Fenway faithful getting a big monster, big green monster home run there, and Aroldis Chapman nails it down. 14 wins in a row for the Red Sox. Dave, if you happen to take $100 and roll it over for these 14 straight wins, you're up a cool $573,000 for your efforts there. So that's all we need to do. If you wanted to become a millionaire, all you need to do is jump in on this Red Sox win streak, roll it over again tonight, and you are a seven-figure winner territory. What a run it's been.
We're going to break this down in earnest a little bit, talk more baseball as the show goes. But let me just ask you the short end question with this team. Not if this is sustainable, because I don't think anybody thinks this is. But is this team really at least good enough to be an actual playoff participant? Like, what was so bad about them and now all of a sudden so good that they look like two polar opposites within 3 weeks?
Well, offensively, this has been a tough team to kind of pinpoint. And certainly without Alex Bregman, no Roman Anthony, this bulk of the season because of the injury issues, just not having a lot of production. And not Caleb Durbin. Chad Durbin, former right-handed pitcher, but Caleb of the offensive variety, the one that hit the home run there. And they've had significant injuries in the rotation. Remember, they've been out Garrett Crochet for a while. They just lost Connelly early and Ranger Suarez, and both those guys had been incredibly productive for them. But it's why you respect the marathon of the season, Dave. You can get hot at any time. And when you do, you just got to try and string some series wins together. But hey, you keep losing, sometimes guys can just say, forget it. It's just not our year. Not the case, man. Just a reminder, they were 15 and a half games back of first place in the American League East, middle of June. They remain six games back of the Tampa Bay Rays with the Rays winning yesterday. And now they would be a playoff team. They'd be a wild card team if the playoffs started today. Just a wild run from the Beantown Warriors.
Yeah, well, now some of those big names, of course, you move on from Devers, you move on from Breggs, and you go, well, where's the meat in this lineup? And they're figuring out ways to get it done with new guys, certainly. And you can see it's right now, certainly in Boston, they're feeling like, man, this is a fun wave to ride. and they don't want to stop anytime soon. Four errors, by the way, by the Orioles, and they capitalized on that in that 6-5 win yesterday. It always is. It's a great slogan. It just means more for the SEC. Day two of those media days down there in Tampa, Florida. Pretty good place to have those media days. I've been a part of those throughout my sports journalism career, if you will, Jensen. I don't know what you glean from some of these things when you talk to the coaches, and many others will talk to them today. Do you take anything away from what you hear at these media day sessions?
Yeah, I know a lot of people look at Greg Sankey as Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars, as though they're the evil empire. But hey, to his credit, they've built kind of their own country when it comes to Southeastern Conference sports, and he should be proud of that. They are a clear tectonic plate. When the SEC and Greg Sankey talks, things move. And yeah, he kind of illustrated on playoff expansion. It's the one thing I take away is that he says the SEC does favor the 16-team model that's frequently been discussed. And I think that that's the thing we'll watch moving forward. The other part of it, remember, for people that don't know, we're going to a 9-game conference schedule in the SEC for football season this year. So that is something that we will handicap in earnest. Obviously, we'll break it down much more. Georgia, the short shot to win the regular season conference title at plus 260, Texas behind them at a little over 3-1. So a lot more to jump into. But hey, get in front of the mic, pump up your team. And hey, you're right. It still means more down there in SEC country.
You mentioned kind of building their own island, their own country, their own entity, if you will. You've heard whispers of secession by the SEC. Like, you know, I know baseball might have a changing landscape coming with their economics. Could you ever see a day where the SEC says, you know, we can actually stand alone if we actually wanted to?
I think they would need a dance partner. And I know the Big Ten obviously has been one of those, at least on the football side, if not the basketball side. Hey, we do have, if you're a Big Ten, you know, team right now, and you're a Big Ten fan, you're like, do you see who's the national champs in football and in basketball? Yeah, it might mean more to you, but we got the trophy. So I think they would need a dance partner. Hey, man, you know, and I know we're in the Wild West now with NIL and with all the money that's being thrown around. So let's kind of see it. First of all, let's see what happens upcoming this year. It's been a 3-year drought now for the SEC and the college football side for national champion. Let's see if they end that streak later on this season.
Yeah, it's a great point because, again, right now, the Big Ten, you could say, has gotten the better, certainly the SEC in recent years. And again, we're not advocating for that, but these are the realities of the changing landscape here in college football. That is for sure. Changing landscape in Michigan. How about this? Ward Manuel is going to step down at the end of the calendar year as the AD. We've had it in both sports here. Prominent head coaches leaving for very different reasons here from the football and basketball side. But Jensen, you know, wasn't that long ago that Harves is there winning a national championship. May's there winning a national championship on the basketball side. Now the AD's leaving and those guys are long gone. Sharon Moore is long gone. Like, there's been a lot of turnover here recently with the Maize and Blue.
Yeah, and usually this coincides with some independent investigations, maybe some scandals. And looking at an article here at ESPN.com, Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, both great friends of the program, it kind of illustrated that the school also released a summary of an independent investigation into the, quote, culture of the scandal-plagued athletic department, which concluded that issues were not widespread. Now, you can only kind of try and put out the flames for so long here, Dave. And Ward Manuel, no spring chicken right now. He is 58 years old. You talked about his run with Jim Harbaugh there, and obviously with what Dusty May just did, leading the men's team to the national title. I think this is probably more so on, you know, we've had all these issues. We've had some of the scandals. It's kind of time to do something else. Well-compensated gentleman, one of the big power players throughout the last decade, you know, not only in college football, but in college sports in general. So might be that one time where you're like, let's go enjoy ourselves. I don't need to be coming to the office every day and be like, all right, what's next? You know, which team do we got to worry about now? So I get it. For what it's worth, Michigan 15-1 to win the Big Ten in college football this year. They are the fifth betting choice behind Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, and USC.
Back to the diamond here very quickly, and we'll dive into these races here next segment right here on By the Books. But Trey Turner, if you don't watch the defense sometimes, the offense can look pretty good. Two homers, five ribbies as the Phillies defeat the Dodgers yesterday. You called this game right here on the program. Nice call by you. You know, I mentioned that defense. If you watch it, sometimes it's perplexing for a guy that you think just botching routine balls. But I guess you put up with it, Jensen, when you get these type of nights like you got last night against the Dodgers.
Yeah, and rare opportunity, too. If you like the Dodgers, they haven't been a road underdog really all year, once or twice. And it just felt like with Christopher Sanchez, probably incredibly motivated to atone for, you know, not the best Midsummer Classic start there in the home uniform. A time to get back on the right side. He actually looked pretty good. And, you know, outside of Schwarber, Harper, and Marsh, good to see that Trey Turner is now starting to catch a little bit of fire. If they want to go where they anticipate they can, he has to be a big piece of the puzzle. So great step in the right direction getting that series opening win last night.
What happened to Joe Ryan last night? He allowed six bombs for the Twins and a loss to the Guardians, most by a pitcher since 1900. I mean, you see history, you don't see it made that way very often, Jensen.
Okay, so the Guardians scored in every inning except for the eighth inning. And Dave, what happened there? There was a position player that was pitching. Oh. Make the game make sense. They got the guys that do it for a living. They couldn't, you know, square up 60 miles an hour from that. So five homers by players who came into the game batting under 200 too, Dave. Oh, that'll keep you up at night.
Let's dig into those wild card races here in the American League and the National League. A little bit later on, we're going to ask you the world of golf. Can you handle the truth? So stay tuned for all of that right here on By the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The NFL preseason is only a couple weeks away, and the best bettors are already getting ahead of the game. Lock in that early bird pricing in our football special, which is just $175 before the price goes up, and it will next month. You're going to get instant access to our 2026 NFL betting guide, plus our upcoming college football betting guide, giving you everything you need to attack those features, win totals, conference races, and the upcoming season before kickoff begins. And the sooner you sign up, the more value you will get. With full VSiN Pro access to everything we do across every major sport, through the Super Bowl next February, that includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross here with you, talking some Major League Baseball right now. And it is that time of the year, certainly in the futures market, you start to look at teams in those AL and NL wildcard races, and they start to get a little bit more clear. Jensen, is that in fact, or are the waters getting murkier by the day?
Yeah, nothing's really clear right now, and that's okay. That's fine for us as fans, because that means you're scoreboard watching real early, and that's a nightmare for front offices trying to figure out what they're going to do at the trade deadline here in a couple of weeks' time. Let's start in the American League, and I think for me, when you're looking at potential spots to jump in, I know that make the playoff prices versus division winning prices are intriguing to people because of the payouts. And Dave, to be fair, only the largest division lead right now in the American League is a game and a half. That's the Rays over the Yankees. White Sox lead the Guardians by one. Mariners lead the Rangers by a half game. And even if you want to expand it out, the Twins are within five of the White Sox. The Astros are within 3.5 of the Mariners. Now, if I'm calling it right now, I know that the Astros and Dana Brown don't want to sell. I think it might be in their best interest to do so. Now, we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks, but I think it's going to come down between Seattle and Texas. I don't think Houston has the horses to be able to hold up there. Same is the case in the Central. I think the Guardians are still a bit short on the offensive side. They got all the pitching in the world. It just feels like if you score three or four runs a night, you're going to have a chance to beat them more often than not. The American League East is intriguing. And now with the Red Sox within six, I just looking at where they were, and you asked me yesterday, would you want to invest around 9-1 for the Red Sox to win the division? And I said, if you feel that way, you might as well take the Red Sox at 10-1 to win the American League and have yourself an opportunity to monetize in various playoff rounds. So let's assume they get in, Dave. You're at a wild card series, depending on the matchup. You could take some profit there if you want. If they get to the division series, same idea. Obviously, if they get to, you know, the ALCS, then you're in a great spot. You know, Will Hill, you mentioned Will Hill, and you and I were texting last night, and you know, he was talking about, boy, should we start taking a little bit deeper look at Boston, at Detroit,
right,
at Baltimore? I tend to think, and I'll get your thoughts on it, it doesn't sound like Detroit is going to trade Tarek Skubal. Now, we've got 2 weeks to go until the trade deadline, and I think that is the most difficult decision and will be the largest and most important decision for Scott Harris and company and that Detroit front office moving forward. Because, Dave, if you do trade him, you're not only waving the white flag on this year, and that's even, excuse me, with Framber Valdez and company that are there. And they've been hitting really well. But you have to get a package back commensurate with understanding you may not play baseball next year, and even, you know, having opportunities to really have this club be able to take a step forward. So with that in mind, I'll ask you roundaboutly, if you had to make the playoffs wager right now of a team on the outside looking in, would you take the Tigers at 3-1? Would you take the Twins plus 350? Would you even entertain the Orioles, who are three games back, at plus 280, knowing just this jumbled nature of the American League wildcard standings at the moment?
You know, we talked about Joe Ryan having a historic night last night for all the wrong reasons, with those six bombs and, you know, the most homers given up since 1900. And that some people were theorizing, oh, he's trying to get the leveraging power down before the trade deadline, like tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But I think we do believe that the Twins would be sellers, right? Like, if we're looking at it today, even though they're closer to the wild card than Detroit is, Detroit's 4.5 games back and Minnesota's only 3 back. So you'd say, well, why would Minnesota move on from a guy like, say, Joe Ryan? Well, I think they know that what they're going to get back in compensation might actually be better than what a Skubal can get back, because of you've got to sign Skubal at the end of the year. And I think that's going to be the harder front to do for some teams with baseball and what the finances are going to look like in the offseason. We don't know, right? So would Detroit then eat it and do kind of a Shohei Ohtani Angels scenario?
Oof.
Where Oof. I think people look back on that, right? And they go, oh my God, you didn't trade this guy. You tried to push in and make it, you know, some sort of Trout Ohtani thing. It didn't work. And then you never got close to the compensation package you could get for arguably the greatest player of all time. We're not saying that's Shohei Ohtani on the pitching side, but Jensen, that's the quandary, is that we've seen recent history and it didn't work out well for the Angels side here, but because other teams are going to go, well, you're not going to re-sign him in the offseason. You already went to arbitration with the guy. And so we know he's going to be available. Like, why do we want to give up a king's ransom for Ohtani, who's going to be the true rental? And again, the Angels weren't willing to do it for the packages they were offered because they felt like they were being lowballed for Shohei Ohtani. What do you think the Tigers are really going to be able to expect if that's what they did years ago to Shohei in the compensation package they're going to be offered for a guy like Tarek Skubal? I don't know that it's going to be commensurate of the player, Jensen, and they might just hold on to him because of it.
I just think they would be more bullish on, hey, we got two top-end starters. Our offense has been better. Let's try and go for it. And I think that's what they're going to do. Mm. Flip side on the National League, I think it's a bit more muddled because you've got teams that have really overperformed, and the St. Louis Cardinals being one of them. And I joked off the top of the show, two historical bad beats back to back, 7-0 lead on Sunday. They blow that one. They have the lead last night. It's the first time in like 400 games that the Angels have trailed heading into the ninth inning and found a way to win. Really appreciate that one. Not ideal. Not great, Bob. So let's look at where we are from the teams here. And you and I have been very bullish on the Marlins and the Pirates. Nothing has changed for me on that. But same exercise for you is if we look at a make the playoffs price on teams on the outside looking in, and I think this is still great. You can get the Pirates still at plus money at plus $1.80. Mm. And they've got the best, at least one of the best scoring offenses in baseball, which I find fascinating. The Pirates are plus $1.80. Diamondbacks are 2-1. The Marlins, who right now are tied for the final wild card spot, are still plus +320. You're already invested there, so we'll throw them out. Would you want to take a gander at St. Louis at plus +350 or throw them out and get to the battle in Buccos or the Diamondbacks, who are right there nipping at the heels?
I'd want to go further down the board, if you can believe it. I am already invested in the Marlins. We got some tickets on the Pirates from before the year began. And I'm looking at that ultimate wild card in A.J. Preller. And I'm looking at San Diego, that have terribly underachieved at this stage, and thinking that they're the type of TM with the type of executive that says, we're three games under 500. The Nats don't scare us. The D-backs don't scare us. The Buccos don't scare us. The Fighting Fish don't. Certainly not the Cardinals. We're better than all those teams if we can get a little bit of help here at the deadline. And I think we'd be the team that would scare the Dodgers. And I know the Dodgers are going to go, what are you talking about, man? They're like our little brother now, right? After coming back a couple years ago, down 0-2, and we beat you 3 in a row in a bullpen game. But that would feel like to me the team that I'd probably want to look at and say, there's going to be not a Red Sox reversal, 14 wins in a row, something like that. But for a team that might get healthier and get better at the trade deadline, again, maybe some of the guys with the numbers on the back of that bubblegum card start to perform more like it as the year goes on. I'm talking about the Tatises of the world right there, has not hit for power all year. It might be the Padres, Jensen, that I'd want to take a shot on and say, if they go make moves, which they normally do, that might be the team that makes that wild card push at a decent value at this juncture.
You are a bolder man than I am. One of the worst offenses in baseball. Not to spoil a chaos candidate, but we might have the San Diego Padres involved as one of those for me upcoming later in the show. So anxious to see it. Bottom line, great for baseball that we are this tight, this jumbled, because it means meaningful baseball for a while here, Dave. And it also means a sprint for the next 2 weeks on where we're going to be as far as the trade deadline goes as well.
Can we do this a couple decades removed and give a little tip of the cat to Bud Selig? Is that still frowned upon in media circles?
Like, no, you're
this
good.
Was his baby, the wild card. And you remember people like Bob Costas and all the old, you know, the purveyors of the game. This is terrible for the game, and you can't do this. You can't change it. You just talked about how many fan bases are now involved right here, Jensen. And that's because of the advent of the wild card, which they've kept expanding. And we talked about that a lot in sports. We're going to talk about it in the next segment as well, of maybe changing the way that you view your sport. And maybe baseball in hindsight now, Jensen, they've been better off because of it.
Going to be fun to watch, man. Let's rock and roll. We got some big tickets in the futures market that we're looking to cash here in the next couple of months. That's for sure.
Nobody likes to give credit to Bud Selig, that's for sure as well. All right, when we come back, America, can you handle the truth? Not just America, but the global game of golf. Do we have to change some things there? We'll discuss next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
A cool $30 million in guaranteed prizes. Cash in this football season in Las Vegas with three Circa Sports contests. Entries starting at $1,000, all with no rake. This means every dollar stays in that prize pool. Circa Millions, 18 weeks, 128 ways to win. How about Circa Survivor? Pick one winner every week, and the last person standing wins. And if you're a high roller, Circa Grandissimo is for you. $100,000 per entry. You got to enter in Nevada, play from anywhere. $30 million guaranteed. Visit circusports.com for all of the details. Jensen Lewis, it is time to have a real talk with the country about what we saw over the weekend at Royal Birkdale. So now I ask you, America, can you handle the truth?
I want the truth. You can't. can't handle the truth.
Can you handle the truth? Here's Dave Ross.
The truth of the matter is, Jensen Lewis, is sometimes sports need to look within. We've seen this happen with a lot of different sports. We just talked about Major League Baseball adding a wild card a couple decades ago, and look what it's done for that sport. We've talked about it in football. Certainly the changing of the rules always have to be updated because sometimes people just can't understand them if you watch an NFL football game. Is that a penalty? I'm not quite sure. Well, we just had this transpire in golf over the weekend at Royal Birkdale, and I don't know that I've ever seen golf media, golf fans, golf Twitter as divided as they have been for the last 3 or 4 days, ever since what happened on Friday with Bryson DeChambeau at the fifth hole. Now, what happened? He blew his tee ball left, and they had to put out a search party to go find the golf ball. And then I think we all know what happened from that point on. Well, we didn't know for quite some time, because after his round was over, when it looked like he was going to sign for a 400 par 66, well, the RNA came to him. They're the governing body here of the British Open, and said, well, Mr. DeChambeau, you're going to have to sign for a 68. You are being assessed a two-shot penalty for improving your pathway to the ball back in the fifth hole. Bryson didn't like that very much. He did not think he was in the wrong. So they go back, and then it just became a circus. It became a show, and everybody was watching. Everybody was captivated because nobody knew what was going on. And that's kind of one of the points here, Jensen, when you're looking at the rules of golf. It can be very confusing. And I know everybody on social media is going to tell you, you don't know what you're talking about. It's very cut and dry. And there, he clearly either broke the rule and deserved the two-shot penalty, or he did nothing wrong and he definitely did not deserve the two-shot penalty. So you're getting a lot of differing information, which kind of gets me back to the greater point here, that when tour pros are either taking to social media and or the media writ large and are kind of on both sides of this equation, maybe we have to look at some of these rules a little bit more closely. Now, Rory McIlroy was asked about this. If you know the history of Rory and Bryson, spotty at best, I might say. So I don't know if Rory's is going to give you maybe the most unbiased answer, Jensen, but here was Rory's assessment of the two-shot penalty that was assessed to Bryson DeChambeau.
So I was watching it live. I was up in the players' lounge watching it with a few other players. And as soon as he made the step into the ball, we all sort of looked at each other and were like, that didn't seem right. And then when I heard that he was, you know, he was called in by the rules officials, I think we all, it was pretty obvious for why. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think there's no doubt that he improved the line of his backswing. So, you know, and again, it's like, whether it was careless or whether it was intentional, I don't think it matters. Hopefully it was careless. But I think the two-shot penalty was justified for sure.
What do you think of the scenes after? Obviously, you guys were delayed getting your tee times as well because of it all going on.
Late night for everyone. I won't pretend to be up here and defend Bryson. I'm not particularly fond of him. I think a lot of it's performative. I think a lot of it's for attention. And yeah, you know, to hold the tournament hostage like that and have all of us, volunteers, players, everyone waiting on him to depart, I didn't feel like it was a great look.
Do you think he knew what he was doing?
Look, he's going to say, like, again, I'm not in his mind. I'm not in his, it, but it didn't look good.
Boy, is something like that, you think that happens out here more than we know, and it just isn't viewed or seen? Or...
Yeah, it's hard, right? Like, he's every shot is on camera. There's a lot of guys that play this week, and the shots aren't on camera. So you can say that that's unfair or whatever, or it might happen more than it does. But it's obviously impossible to police everyone, and that's why it is a, you know, for the most part, a self-policing game. But I think when there is obvious evidence like there was last night, then obviously that's a different story.
Arumph, we ran it in its entirety, so we don't say he took it out of context. Those were his full comments, okay? And in his eyes, he cheated. That's basically what you're impugning his character when you say, well, I hope he didn't do it unintentionally or intentionally. But you're basically getting to that fact. And that's why a lot of players then had to be asked, whether or not Bryson DeChambeau is a cheater. That was the next stage here. And you can couch it however you want with a soft language. That's essentially what you're calling Bryson DeChambeau and what he did at the fifth hole. And Sam Burns played with him on Saturday after the ruling, and Sam's take was very different from Rory's take. Take a listen.
I thought the fans were very supportive of Bryson today. I think we didn't discuss it any. In my personal opinion, I honestly feel bad for Bryson and the situation that he was in. From my perspective, I didn't feel like maybe there was enough, you know, evidence to for him to deserve a penalty there. And I felt bad for him. I think, you know, he played an incredible round of golf late yesterday, and it's unfortunate to have something kind of like that where, you know, they come in after your round and tell you you're being docked two shots. But props to him. I mean, he came out and played a really nice round of golf today, and that takes a lot of grit to be able to come out and do that. So I was impressed.
One guy, he definitely deserved the penalty. The other guy, he definitely did not deserve the penalty. Scotty Scheffler, we ran the soundbite yesterday, Jensen, right here in the program, said, I played with the guy. He's not a cheater. I mean, because again, you're kind of impugning a guy's character. And sometimes in the PGA Tour, well, not sometimes, anytime that you do that, that's the worst crime of all that you can be asked. We've seen it in baseball, right, with the trash can, with the Astros. We've seen it in football. Tom Brady's been accused of being a cheater. Bill Belichick's been accused of being a cheater. With Tiger Woods with a drop back in 2013. I mean, this has happened throughout. But I think the point here is, if the RNA did not call that penalty, I don't think anybody would have thought anything of it. And then Rory sees a camera angle and goes, oh, he definitely did it. And Scotty said the direct opposite. So sometimes a camera angle, you can't see what the player sees. So we have to do an adjustment on the rules. Let's get to Scotty for a second here on 17 of what we saw there. If you watch this closely, where a TIO, he hits it into a temporary immovable obstruction area, right? And this is not Scotty's fault. Scotty did not break a rule here on 17. But again, the spirit of the rule, we're getting on Bryson for a he said, and we really don't even know if anything really happened there. We all saw Scotty's ball go 100 yards past the grandstand into the gorse bush, and they never found the ball, which we normally deem a lost ball. But because the RNA had designated this area to be a TIO, he took advantage of the rule. But again, the spirit of the rule, it changes the betting markets as well. Scotty's prop was 67.5. And for what we do, if you had the over, you're not happy about that ruling. You're going, oh my God, if any of us did that, that's a lost ball, and we all know that. We're taking a drop, but with a stroke, okay? Bryson DeChambeau, if you're playing with your boys, are you really calling that? I don't know that you are. Maybe you are, and I know that some people are saying he should have called it on himself. If he doesn't think he committed a penalty, he's not going to call anything on himself, and Bryson didn't think he was in the wrong. You had the RNA saying you committed a penalty. You had Bryson DeChambeau said, I know exactly what I did, and I did not commit a penalty. We normally go on the honor code in golf, and we take the player at his word. And now that's been challenged. And so now you've opened up this Pandora's box. Are you going to believe the player, or are you not going to believe the player? That's what this gets down to. You can soft word it all you want, but that's why some of the American players, like the Russell Henleys, like the Sam Burns, like the Scotty Schefflers, came back and said, I've played with this guy from junior golf. He's a lot of things. We're not saying you have to like the guy, but he's definitely not a cheater. That's the brass tacks here, golf. And that's the world that you're now finding yourself in. I think we need to have more of a common sense approach. You should never be rewarded for a lost ball. First and foremost, again, Scotty did nothing wrong, but the rule is terrible. And again, if it's inconclusive on this with Bryson, and if the number one player in the world is telling you that camera angles can deceive you people from what you're watching on Twitter, and NBC's doing the broadcast, Jensen, and not one person in real time said a peep about a possible infraction from Bryson DeChambeau, maybe that should be a play on and not affect the guy that closed the day before the ruling as the betting favorite to win the tournament. And by the way, before you say, oh, you had a ticket on Bryson, I had nothing on Bryson. You just got to call what's fair is fair. And that did not seem fair. And there were a number of players who'd said that publicly, that they did not feel right the way they adjudicated that to Bryson DeChambeau. Can you handle the truth, America? Because the truth is, the rules of golf need to go under a microscope after the way we saw play out at Royal Birkdale over the weekend. Let's talk about those media days. Well, it just means more. How much more does it actually mean? Let's break down the SEC next right here on VSiN by the Books.
by the books right here on VSiN.
Media days for the SEC continue today. Jensen Lewis, we know that this conference likes to tell you that it just means more. It does mean a lot, that's for sure, in college football. Auburn, Georgia, South Carolina, and your Vandy boys will be going to the podium today. Let's talk about some of these teams in earnest here. Would you like to start with your alma mater, or would you like to start with the Auburn War Eagle Tigers?
We can start with Vandy because it's probably the biggest year-over-year transition for one of the teams that obviously took the entire, not only league, but the sport by storm with, if you want to call it, the legend of Diego Pavia. Of course, a Heisman finalist there that we can leave that one to the side. That era is done. But you're 10-3 last year. You had an opportunity for a breakthrough. You took advantage of it. We all remember where we were when they took down number one Alabama at home. But now it changes. You lose not only your quarterback, you lose your top tight end, you lose your top wide receiver, four offensive linemen, big chunk of the defensive production from last year, four of the five top tacklers, Dave. So all Clark Lea has to do is insert arguably the highest rated recruit in program history in Jared Curtis as the new face at quarterback. From all the reports, it sounds like things in spring practice have been very positive. But again, you are asking a true freshman in the SEC to go out and try and win you football games, always a tough hill to climb there. So I would expect regression. I don't think we're reinventing the wheel on that, Dave. When you look at their schedule, a couple of tough road tests, including at Auburn, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. You're at Georgia, always a tough place to win. And then in the swamp at Florida, again, you're going to have to win a couple of these if you're going to be viable in the SEC. They'll welcome Alabama back, Ole Miss, Tennessee. You look at their strength of schedule just in the SEC alone, and that kind of lends you to this could be a transition slash rebuild year after the breakout campaign. If I were to take my heart out of it, Dave, and not want to, you know, put my rooting interest involved there, I would say the smart play, if you can find an under 5.5 at plus money for their season win total, I think that's very viable here. Again, and a lot of it goes back to how you and I handicap not only college teams, but also NFL teams. The trigger man and what you can expect out of that. Hard to really diagnose what a freshman can do for you, albeit it's all the talent of the world, but I'll be realistic here looking at what they lost from just a year ago. I think the under 5.5 is probably at plus money. My early best bet that I would take for my Commodores.
I mean, tough road games. Look, at the SEC, it's going to be tough no matter where you go on a given Saturday, whether it's to the Plains and taking on Auburn, between the hedges against Georgia, at Florida, down there in the swamp, home games against Bama, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. But let me ask you this, because Clark Lea could have left if he wanted to, right, for richer pastures, and he stayed. And there are certain programs that I've watched historically where you can go back and kind of earmark where coaches could have left, stayed, and then that program became something. They got some continuity. And it was the coach that really kind of was the impetus of that. Go back to the Frank Beamer days at Virginia Tech. They were kind of an afterthought. Then they became a national power, but largely in part because the head guy stood it out, stuck it out, and made something of that school and that university because they believed in it. Are you there with Clark Lea? And I know maybe not to bet the over, and as you mentioned, you can get plus money in the under at plus $1.10. But is he that type of guy that in Clark Lea you can trust and say, maybe not this year, but the long-term prognosis will be good for Vandy football?
Well, let's start there. I mean, would you in your lifetime, Dave, have said the Vanderbilt Commodores would get arguably the highest rated quarterback in that high school class to come there and play for the black and gold? I think that's an indicator. The coach has got a pretty damn good message, and what you saw on the field you think is viable and you can be a part of it and taking it to the next level. I think Candace Story, the athletics director there for Vanderbilt, has not only reinvigorated a lot of the landscape there, but Dave, you and I talk about this a lot. When you get the rich donors, and hey, I'm a small part of it. I'm nowhere near the multi-million dollar donations that a lot of our bigwigs have. But when you get, you know, College Game Day to come there and you get kind of that exposure, I'll put it in the same ilk. When I was in West Virginia in Morgantown, you have the moments that you do there in the regional and the super regional, you get to Omaha. Those are huge steps forward that now people take notice of it. That's what Vanderbilt did under Clark Lea, and they were a team you wanted to watch. Whether you like Diego Pavia or not, you kind of enthralled with the lightning rod, the family in the stands, seeing kind of what this dynamic offense would do. And their defense was really good. Their defense was really, really good. We had a lot of unders late in the year because the unit was viable. But let's be honest. Let's go back to macro. If Jared Curtis comes out and is the man, I will absolutely just tip my cap and say, great out of you, young pup. But I think you also know that, Dave, we've got 9 conference games here. You're trying to get over 5.5, and just look at the road games. You're asking me to win at least 1, if not 2, in that schedule. That is going to be a really, really tough task.
Might be tough for first-year head coach Alex Golish down there in Auburn. Does bring over his quarterback from South Florida in Byron Brown. But again, you're talking about kind of historical places there. You know, you win a national championship. Doesn't feel like that long ago when Cam Newton was there. And then you go a decade plus removed, and it's like, well, who's Auburn football at this point? We know that, you know, Bama's everything down there, and they're kind of the little brother that hopefully they believe can turn this thing around with the new guy at quarterback and head coach. What do you make of what we might see from War Eagle this year?
So for people that have not watched Alex Golish at South Florida, this is up-tempo, this is explosive, and he brought the guy who is already very well endowed with the system, and that's Byron Brown. So you're going to see a lot of action both through the air and with the legs. The question for me, I know they were very heavy in the transfer portal as far as the offensive line. The rest of that roster is going to have to adapt to SEC life quite quickly. They did keep the defensive coordinator and DJ Durkin there. It's solid for them the last couple of years, and that continuity will be great. Schedule's brutal, man. You know, you're going to have Baylor in Atlanta. That's a pretty solid non-conference opener. Then it's Florida, LSU, Tennessee, Georgia, Bama. If you get to 7 or 8 wins, Dave, I think that is a really outstanding job in year one for Alex Golish stepping up to the heavyweights here. I would actually, though, want to take a chance, I think, on the over here at 6.5, just because it is going to be a bit more of an onboarding here for other teams to prove that they can stop Byron Brown in the dual threat nature of that offense. So I think a lot predicated on how quickly can the offensive line really come together. They're going to have at least a little bit of a runway in the non-conference, but man, you better have everything buttoned up by the time you get into that SEC conference schedule.
Speaking of coaches that you trust, Kirby Smart, you got to lay 240 for the Bulldogs to get back into the college football playoff, which is interesting because you can get plus 260 to win the SEC. So Jensen, what that tells me in the betting market, you got a nice cushion there that you can lose one, dare I say two, could you lose 3 and still get in? I mean, that's quite the difference there from winning the SEC at plus money and laying over $2 to make the college football playoff. What do we make of Kirby and the Georgia Bulldogs this year?
Yeah, it's a brand you trust, right? Gunnar Stockton's back, and what we saw with him with the high completion percentage last year, dual threat as well in his own right. The big moments, he was equal to the task and then some. I believe they do return 7 starters on offense, 6 on defense. That is great continuity in its own right. You get a couple of big home games and a big test against Oklahoma. Just talked about Auburn. Going down to Ole Miss is going to be fun to see how that works. And, of course, you get Bama and what that game will look like. Greatest outdoor cocktail party taking on Florida in Jacksonville. Hey, 9 games, extra game. I still would feel, I think I found 9.5s that are over at almost $2. I feel it's like $1.80. Would be, I don't think that's too much because again, you get the cushion, but I think you get a little bullish. I think you take the over 10.5 at the plus 160. Again, you know that the defense is going to do what they do. It's always built that way under Kirby Smart. I would take my chances on an over 10.5 at plus money, just knowing what they're capable of. And a year that I think a lot of people are looking at them to be one of the preeminents out of the Southeastern Conference.
I know Tim Murray has dubbed it the year of the quarterback. Gunnar Stockton, one of those quarterbacks, so he'll be getting a lot of eyeballs on him. Lenora Sellers will be another quarterback that disappointing last year, only four wins for South Carolina and Shane Beamer down there, the younger Beamer ball version down there for South Carolina. Jensen, do we expect the bounce back here? 6.5 is their win total this year.
I don't know. Lenora Seller, I mean, got hurt towards the end of the year, too. You get the new OC and Kendall Briles coming in. Should be more aggressive in that regard. Again, tried to upgrade the offensive line in the portal. Yikes. You're at Bama, at Florida, at Oklahoma, at Clemson. That screams under to me. So I would say under 6.5 would be where I would go at minus $1.30.
Woo. Although I do like those last names there when you've got Beamer and Briles right there as your kind of the brain trust there. I like their dads and what they were able to do back in the day as well. Got a lot to get to here. Greg Peterson is going to join the program here in the next hour. Get his baseball bets. That's all straight ahead right here on VSiN by the Books.